Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal here with Francis Schott. Together we own Stage Left and Captain Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every Monday to Friday from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Good morning, Mark.
Morning, Francis.
How are you this morning?
I'm well.
I'm glad to hear it. I know that occasionally you read The Economist magazine.
Yeah, I do.
They came out with a study.
I'll tell you, The Economist, I haven't been really high on their food articles. But
No, but here's a study. This is I'm drinking. Are you ready for this?
Mm-hmm.
The Economist released a study in which countries drink the most. Guess which country came in first?
France.
Luxembourg.
So I was close.
Now, what amused me about this is the reporting of The Economist. Luxembourg, the tiny landlocked country nestled between France, Belgium, and Germany. But why Luxembourg? One explanation, this is from The Economist, one explanation is that the duty on alcohol is relatively cheap in the tiny nation compared to its neighbors, which encourages booze tourism from its more heavily taxed neighbors. My favorite is the last line of the article where it says, "There is no explanation, however, for Ireland coming in second." I've got one.
Here's the thing about Luxembourg, though. There's only like 20 people who live there. You get one, alcoholic, and
exactly.
He's skewing all the data.
Exactly.
So, you know, okay. one guy drinks, 50 bottles of wine in a month period, and your data's all fouled.
Okay, I pulled off something else for you. That you know how this the phrase "all things in moderation."
Can you do me a favor?
Yeah.
While we're in the studio together.
Yeah.
Don't pull anything off. All right.
No.
That's a promise.
Pull this out of the computer.
Excellent.
For you. All things in moderation. Right. You know that you've heard that phrase.
Yes. I'm not great at it. I have to tell you.
Well.
It's not really my thing.
Well, here
I'm kind of an overdoer.
Yeah. Well, here are 10 things that they list that they say. In your all things in moderation, don't do this ever. Okay, because the very act of consuming these foods is not moderation, is unbridled gluttony. That's what it is. And you know what?
It's not all gluttony. Some of it is just actually so bad for you in even small quantities.
Well, that's what I mean. It's just even a tiny bit's unbridled gluttony.
Arsenic. Okay, arsenic. You should not have small quantities of arsenic.
But that's not gluttony because nobody likes arsenic. This is tasty.
I don't know. I hear it's got kind of an almond flavor to it. It's tasty.
Yeah. So here are the 10 foods. You ready? Number one food that you should just never have, according to this, and I didn't get the attribution when I printed it out. I forgot.
It came from a magazine called Nutrition Action, but I'm not sure. I know it was posted on AOL.
I know the study was done by the Center for Science and the Public Interest, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Number one food is the Pepperidge Farm Flaky Crust Pot Pie. You ready for the details in the Pepperidge Farm Flaky Crust Pot Pie?
I am prepared.
According to the package, one serving, so this is according to their own statistics, one serving of the chicken pot pie, and if you've seen one of these, they're about a single serving size, I think, but that's in my view, one serving has 510 calories, 9 grams of saturated fat. Now, that's a lot, right?
Uh-huh.
But it doesn't seem like off the charts.
Right, I mean, for a meal, if that's what you're having.
It's a bad meal.
It's a bad meal. It's a bad choice.
Problem is, their serving size is one half.
So I got to share my personal pot pie with you?
Nobody.
Because that's not happening.
Nobody
I'm
does
not
that.
Sharing my personal pan pizza with you, and I'm not sharing my pot pie with you.
So what that comes to is over 1,000 calories, 18 grams of saturated fat, and 13 grams of trans fat from the partially hydrogenated vegetable oil in each pie, making for a total of 31 grams of artery-clogging fat. This is a death pie. Death pie. And I've had one. It's tasty.
It's not that tasty. Sorry.
McDonald's
it's not worth it.
Number two, McDonald's Select premium breast strips. They sound healthy, don't they?
Well, you would think, you know, the Select, you know, I think there are parents out there buying these because they're better than the McNuggets. The Select breast strips actually are like a whole piece of chicken.
Standard five-strip order has 630 calories, 11 grams of fat. That's about the same as Big Mac. Speaking of Big Mac, the Big Mac has 1,010 milligrams of sodium.
It's a lot of salt.
While the Select hits 1,550 without the sauce.
That's 50% more salt from a lot of salt.
I'm scaring myself. Okay? I'm not the healthiest eater in the world.
Well, the one thing you never have to worry about is eating chicken selects. It didn't make the list.
That's true. Okay, let's go down to, because I'm only going to pick the ones that are unexpected. I mean, we have, you know, the pint of ice cream.
Right,
is,
the
know,
Cheesecake Factory cheesecake.
That's a lot.
The Mrs.
You know,
Fields cookies.
You know that.
We knew that.
You ready? But you ready for this one? Starbucks on steroids is the name of number six.
Well, here's where I think people are just going down the wrong road, but go ahead.
Starbucks Venti Cafe Mocha with whipped cream is more than a mere cup of coffee. They suggest you think of it as a quarter pounder with cheese in a cup.
And I would never drink one again.
Few people
just
have...
because the thought of a...
Pureed
quarter pounder would gross me out way too much.
Few people have in the room in their diets for the 490 calories, 16 grams of bad fat that's in this hefty beverage. But you can still lose, But if you order it with non-fat milk and no whipped cream, you're down to 170 calories.
Big difference.
Big.
But, you know, this is what's happened with a lot of these coffee shops. They've created, we'll call them milkshakes, because that's really what they are, coffee-flavored milkshakes. And people are buying them, and I'm afraid that people out there are thinking that these coffee-flavored milkshakes are coffee.
Yeah.
And that's not really what they are.
I'm going to go get a cup of coffee. Yeah, I just had a cup of coffee. You had a cheeseburger.
Yeah, you had a milkshake. That's what they are. They're equivalent to a big old frosty from, you know, the dairy barn.
In your world, you just made that stuff up.
All that stuff up because I was trying not to disparage any particular dairy barn.
I got one more for you. I think people often also think that Mexican food will be good for you, and I often go for Mexican food, and I enjoy it quite a bit. And you can eat healthfully in a Mexican restaurant. There's a lot of vegetables and beans and stuff there. Pay attention, however, if you're interested in a Chipotle chicken burrito. With tortilla, rice, pinto beans, cheese, chicken, sour cream, and salsa.
And it does sound like something I'd be interested in.
1,180 calories and 19 grams of fat. Or the same as 3 6-inch Subway steak and cheese subs.
You know, a lot of these prepared foods, and I guess the answer is we're looking at a lot of prepared foods, and Francis and I talk about eating whole foods being better for you. In the restaurant, we try and cook with as many whole ingredients as we possibly can, and for the most part, we succeed. When you're eating these processed foods from sources that you don't know or trust, you take a much greater risk.
You may think, you know, to go out and have a chicken breast for dinner is a good idea, is a good dinner. So you may think that having your McDonald's Chicken Select premium breast strips is like, oh, I'm giving my kids chicken breasts. You're not. You're giving your kids 700 calories.
They're worse off than the Big Mac.
And 1,500 grams of salt.
When you process foods... Right.
You diminish them.
And some of the stuff is counterintuitive, but your intuition needs to be to stay away from things like that.
Hey, listen, we're going to come back and talk to Patricia Wells, who will be joining us after this segment. She is author of a new book called Vegetable Harvest, and we're going to be talking about foods that are good for you and tasty at the same time. Central Jersey, 1450. It's 1115. Hey, everybody, welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick, New Jersey. And today we're joined by Patricia Wells. She's, of course, one of the leading American authorities on French cuisine. She has over 10 books to her credit. Her most recent book is Vegetables at the Center of the Plate, A Vegetable Harvest.
Patricia Wells, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
It's wonderful. We were talking about bad foods in the first segment of our show, which we don't normally do, but we figured it would be a nice counterpoint.
I heard a little bit of that. It didn't make me too hungry.
We thought it would be a nice counterpoint to your book, which is coming out here. Why you've written now for much of our audience, I'm sure, knows who you are. Your books are wonderful. You've been an authority on French cuisine, probably the foremost American authority on French cuisine. And your books are great, but they've been about certain cuisines and certain places and all set in France. And now you're writing a book about vegetables. Why vegetables? Why now?
Well, I guess as cooks, we all evolve. And I guess over the years, I've created more and more a style that's specific to the way I cook and entertain and use the recipes in my cooking classes. And as I was finishing up my last book called The Provence Cookbook, I was testing just some last-minute recipes or retesting things, and they all, just by happenstance, ended up being vegetables. And I put them all on the table in the middle of July, and I looked down and I said, this has got to be my next book. And, I mean, I'm fortunate enough to have a really lovely vegetable garden and be live in the center of the vegetable area of Provence, and it just seemed to be the natural thing to do. And also I realized that it was the way that my husband and I had eaten for quite a while, you know, instead of having, you know, chicken and then think, you know, as a bite, you know, think, well, maybe we'll have some green beans with that. You know, we tend to think, oh, look at these beautiful green beans in the market. Oh, the eggplant just came in. Let's do that. And then maybe we'll roast the chicken, you know. So using kind of the protein element of the meal almost as an afterthought and putting the vegetables first, which is the idea of vegetables at the center of the plate.
Well, here in New Jersey and New York, when we get to the height of the season, July, August, September, that really is the way you should be thinking. Those are the primary elements that are available right now. Those are
absolutely
the things
but,
that
you
are
know,
special.
Even in the winter you can do that. I mean, there's a wonderful kind of a winter vegetable stew or a fall vegetable stew. It doesn't have to be limited to summer, but, of course, we certainly are most, you know, happy to do that in the summertime. But you have something I don't have, and that's great, corn.
Oh, yeah.
Would you like us to ship you some corn? I can have it overnighted to you.
By the time I get it, I wouldn't really think.
You know, I remember reading many years ago. Now, Mark and I have been in the restaurant business about 20 years. And,
right.
I remember reading as sort of, you know, in the 80s when American restaurants following the French Nouvelle tradition, there were the new American restaurants, and the world was full of goat cheese and sun-dried tomato restaurants.
Right.
And,
which aren't too bad, though.
You know, it was great at the time, and it was a part of the evolution of the American restaurant scene, which is very exciting now, and I'm thrilled with my choice of profession. But I remember reading some people who said, who were talking about, would restaurants become a central part of how Americans got their food? And I think among, you know, middle class and people, there are more and more restaurants are where we get our food. I remember reading someone saying, you know, the thing about restaurants is they'll never be a valid meal replacement. They'll never be a place where Americans can get a lion's share of their food until you can get vegetables and interesting vegetables in your with your dinner at fine dining restaurants. That's how you'll know
that is
restaurants
interesting. That's a very interesting thought.
And do you think that's the case?
You know, in certain places, but I wouldn't say everywhere. Although I think, you know, certainly we, you know, the quality of the vegetables, of everything we eat today is just keeps improving and improving. But I think certainly in the vegetables. In fact, we've been watching some of the original Julia Childs that are on DVD, and they're so camp. But, I mean, I feel so bad. She was doing a potato show, and we would have thrown those potatoes over the fence. You know, they were such horrible quality.
Sure.
But that was all she had to use.
And she had to use canned goods where we'd be able to use fresh.
I think another interesting thing that's happened is among great chefs and among aspiring young chefs, there is a certain cat. You've seen for a number of reasons, you know, as tasting menus become more commonplace in the United States, and you know, you spend a lot of time in Europe where they've always been common.
Right.
But as they become more common in the United States, there's been a move to come up with vegetarian tasting menus.
I think that's a great idea.
I was going to say, I think it started as an accommodation to vegetarian diners, but it's almost now a badge of honor among chefs.
Right. And also, just to mention, the book is not a vegetarian book. It's, you know, we have meats and we have poultry and we have fish in it. But it's really to just encourage people, you know, I think as chefs, as cooks and chefs, I'm sure, you get in a rut, you know, and you cook eggplant this way, you cook zucchini that way. This is what you do with your, you know, Brussels sprouts. And here the idea is to think about all the different ways you can use these vegetables. So many of them can be eaten raw, they can be sautéed, they can be blanched, they can be steamed, they can be deep fried. And to just, you know, think of different ways of how to do something.
You know, and Patricia, we have so many restaurateurs and people in the business who listen to the show. And I think it's interesting to see how cuisine has evolved here, restaurant cuisine and home cuisine, because I think really good home cooks always paid more attention to vegetables. And we're now...
Absolutely. I mean, I still still find, I have to admit, you know, even in the top restaurants in France, I'm always kind of like disappointed that they aren't more creative with vegetables. Some chefs are. Somebody like Guy Savoy has always, you know, his plates have always been green, you know, mm-hmm. they've always been vegetables. But you go to a lot of places and I think, wait a minute, it's asparagus season. How come there's no asparagus on the menu?
Well, or you'll go in here in Jersey, you know, we have, right now we're getting hothouse tomatoes. In about 2-3 weeks, we'll start getting real tomatoes. Maybe even in a week or two. But I'll go to some place here in Jersey, and our corn here is amazing, and our mm-hmm. tomatoes here are amazing. And I'll go to some pretty nice restaurant, and on the side of the plate will be served to me as a garnish or whatever, a tomato that I know is from Guatemala.
Mm-hmm. I know.
And I'm like, well, I think, well, you know, this isn't even the cheapest tomato you can buy. It's right. just the most convenient at this
I'll
point.
I'll tell you,
it's just the chef being lazy, you know?
Yeah.
But just the other day, we had a purveyor deliver us strawberries from California. I'm like, I'm not taking strawberries from California. I live in New Jersey during the height of strawberry season.
Well, we're going to take a break. We're going to come right back. We're going to talk with Patricia Wells about her book, Vegetable Harvest. You need to pick it up. It's a great, simple, straightforward book. And we'll talk more about the role of vegetables in our cuisine, especially relevant this time of year. Central Jersey, 1450. It's 1125.
The place, Brooklyn, New York, post-World War II. An Italian-American woman named Catherine Lombardi cooks for her family. What's so special about that? Well, lots. Food was central back then. Good food handed down from the traditions of two countries. Food that filled the whole house with the sweet smells of garlic, tomato, and basil. No matter when you stopped by or who you were sure to be fed and fussed over. Catherine showed her love on the plate and out of the pot. Any who were lucky enough to receive it never forgot. This is Mark Pascal from the Restaurant Guys Radio Show and Stage Left. I've just opened Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, and its mission? To live up to the standards set by Catherine Lombardi. So come by the bar, sit by the fire. Have some fresh mozzarella and antipasto. The matagut and tortelloni are amazing, and the veal chop will make you cry. Our wine list, of course, without parallel. We've got to live up to the standards set by Catherine Lombardi. You see, Catherine Lombardi was my grandmother. Come let me show you where I came from.
Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, 732-296-9463 or CatherineLombardi.com. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. It's the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis, and we're talking with Patricia Wells, author of many books, her most recent of which is Vegetable Harvest, Vegetables at the Center of the Plate.
You know, Patricia, Francis introduced you earlier as one of the leading American authorities on French cuisine, but you're really cheating because you're actually in France, aren't you?
Well, why is that cheating?
I think it's good research.
You're researching constantly.
That's right.
Well,
every minute of the day.
Now you're in Provence, and I think that a lot of people don't realize you've written many books, and we love your books. But people don't realize the differences in French cuisine, say from Paris to Provence to Normandy. Can you talk to us about the differences in French cuisine and maybe the roles that vegetables play in
absolutely, absolutely. I mean, where we live in just north of Avignon, and I knew the figure a few years ago, but I think at least 60% of the vegetables in France are grown in our county, in our area. Right now we have the most incredible tomatoes in my garden. I just got my first tomato yesterday. We have eggplant, we have zucchini, we have every kind of herb, we have berries, we have figs, we have peaches, cherries, pumpkin. I'm probably forgetting lots of everything. And we just got a pistachio tree, which is amazing.
And so,
I don't have any pistachios yet.
By the way, congratulations on your first tomato. We're foodies, too. We know how big that is. We're waiting.
It's like Christmas. Confess, somebody stole it.
Well, I
don't know if it was stolen, except that I'm having a cooking class right now, and it was a tiny little tomato, and we were trying to figure out how we could divide this tomato into 14. And so we were going to have it for lunch tomorrow. And we came back yesterday from a restaurant lunch, and it was gone. But it could have been a little rabbit.
I have a tomato-eating squirrel who is really, you know, in a lot of trouble with me these days.
I think you should write a children's book, Mark, about the tomato-eating squirrel. You know,
like some of the specialties of the region are soup au pistou, which is a vegetable soup with a pesto sauce. Lots of fruit tarts. We'll be making an apricot tart tomorrow, and tonight we're making a tart with some raspberries. And so it's, you know, it's a really summer kind of thing. In Normandy, of course, you've got all the wonderful cheeses and apples. In the Pays Basque, you've got the wonderful Basque peppers and all the fantastic tuna from Saint-Jean-de-Luz.
We're gonna go and listen to the news, which is coming up in just a moment. But when we come back, we're going to be talking more with Patricia Wells about vegetables, her book that you can buy and learn how to take advantage of the height of the season we're in right now. Of course, you can find out about that at RestaurantGuysRadio.com. More after the news. Central Jersey, 1450. It's 11:30.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to the Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal here with Francis Schott. Together we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon, reach us through RestaurantGuysRadio.com, or download our podcasts on iTunes.
Patricia Wells is perhaps the leading American authority on French cuisine. She has over 10 books. Her latest project is Vegetable Harvest, Vegetables at the Center of the Plate. Patricia, we were talking about how the role of vegetables in America, we've sort of become more aware of them, especially in restaurants, and I think that's more important as we, number one, many of us get most of our meals from restaurants, and number two, we take inspiration from those restaurants for what we cook at home, through books, through the television network, through celebrity chefs.
Right. But
things have really changed, and I think your book really points this out. I remember when I started in the restaurant business, you'd go to a restaurant and every plate was constructed as follows: protein, vegetable, starch. Protein,
right.
Vegetable, starch. And and very often for nine of the dishes, the starch and the vegetable were the same. They were the veg
right.
of the day, you know.
Right.
And that's changed here, but that's always been right. It's more integrated in France.
Wild rice was considered fancy schmancy.
Right.
Right. Right.
So can you talk to us about how that's changed in the American perception of vegetables among great chefs? Because you have worked with many great chefs.
Well, I think we have to also talk about seasonality, because I think there are lots of, you know, even years ago, I think we were much less concerned about seasonality. You know, you think of carrots in the summer and you wouldn't care, you know. You'd use eggplant all year long and so on. And I think that now people are much more conscious of farmers markets, what they can, you know, what's available there, and also creating new combinations that, you know, don't come from the 10 greatest hits of you know, cuisine.
And so what are some things that you have that you would like to point out in your book? And I have read through your book, and it's wonderful. But what are some things that you would point out about how you use vegetables, or suggest that home cooks use vegetables, that maybe an American might not think of?
Well, I think we don't think about raw zucchini, which is fantastic. One of my favorite recipes in the book is I call it a zucchini carpaccio, and you slice very young zucchini, very, very thin. You marinate it just a little bit in a vinaigrette that, hopefully, if you can find it, a good pistachio oil or a good nut oil, some lemon juice. You can put some lemon zest in that. And then you layer it with zucchini, avocado. And it's a fantastic, and then you can put pistachios or pistachio oil and fresh thyme on it, and it's a great first course. You can do lots of different things. You can either create it as a first course, or I also sometimes just cut all of those things into cubes and marinate it and serve it as a little appetizer on a, you know, on an Asian spoon.
Can I throw something out there?
Can you what?
Can I throw something out there? I want to get your reaction to the to this. It's funny because Mark and I go and shop at the Green Market, and this year we've been doing it ourselves quite a bit, and it's actually a lot of fun. The problem is then I have to come to work and work until 2 in the morning. That's when it's less fun.
But the good part of it is then I also hand the ingredients over to somebody and say, make this taste really good for me, okay?
But, you know, when I'm at the Green Market, we see things like zucchini, you know, or that we have in season locally. And when you have an in-season local zucchini, you can do a preparation like you just talked about, and it's delicious, and it's vibrant, and it's bright, and the acidity actually has a little bit of acidity. But if you try that with a store-bought zucchini or an out-of-season zucchini, you're going to get a dull vegetal dish.
You're right.
Do you agree with me on that?
Absolutely. But that's, I mean, this is, you know, I think that, you just have to be really tough on yourself with vegetables. I know myself. I mean, I know that if I go to one merchant, it'll be okay, but it won't be as great as if I go out of the way and go to this other merchant.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I'm not saying that it's all easy to find the best and the freshest. And when you're talking about vegetables, you really do have to shop every day.
Well, and the other thing I want to say to people is we have a wealth of green markets available around here. We have a wealth of farm stands available around here. If you look at I look at those dishes in your book, and I think in the hands of my mom, that would be a debacle, because when you work with vegetables, you know, frankly, great vegetables aren't that expensive, but they're
no.
a little bit of work to find.
No, in fact, I said to my husband, I said, you realize how much money we're saving by just almost living on vegetables? I mean, especially this time of year, they're so cheap. They just, you know, we go to the farmer's market, they always give them away. You know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, not to mention the fact that I can go, when I go around and I search and search and search for all these great vegetables and fruits as well, I can satisfy that hunter instinct in me when I finally find my conquest.
Right. There's one you asked me to mention some recipes, and there's one that I really want you both to go home and try, or
okay.
go to your restaurant and try. It's a marinated heirloom tomato soup. So as soon as you get the heirloom tomatoes, do this, because I make it every few days, and I drink it for breakfast. It's like my V8 juice.
Uh-huh.
And it's just, it's tomatoes, there's water in there, there's vinegar, lots of tomato paste. There's celery salt, which I haven't used in a million years, but it's a really great element in this. And I'm trying to think of what else is in there. But it's so simple, and you just put it all together in the food processor, and you don't even have to peel the tomatoes. I mean, literally, it goes together in 2 minutes, and it stays fresh in the refrigerator for several days. So it's a great recipe for entertaining, because you can even make it the day ahead.
Because you've added that vinegar to it.
Right.
May we put that recipe up on our website?
Please, I'd be very happy if you did.
So if you go to restaurantguysradio.com, you can find out how to buy Patricia Wells' book, but you can also get that recipe. And, you know, that's a very cross-cultural thing. Among cultures that have tomatoes, like in Provence or in Spain or in Italy, or hopefully in Jersey, where
or
tomatoes
Brooklyn.
Grow. You know, in Spain, they have. I spent some time in Andalusia, and they have gazpacho. And in the summertime,
right.
you would go over someone's house, and there is in their refrigerator a blender full of gazpacho that they just throw a little more tomato and a little more bread in, and they serve it to you like the Irish serve tea. You know,
right.
when you visit,
no, it's so it's so delicious, and it's filling, and it's healthy, and. How, you can't go wrong.
Talk to us about one of the things that I find most exciting. Throughout different parts of the year, if you're going to a green market or to a farm stand, you will find different vegetables and herbs in flowering. So we use zucchini blossoms. We had some flowering watercress that we threw on some salads.
Ooh, I've never seen flowering watercress.
It's pretty cool stuff.
Oh.
But, I mean, chive flowers and... I mean, I think that those things are really interesting to use as a garnish.
They're
or
great because they
always
have such a strong flavor.
Exactly.
You know, well, not zucchini blossoms, but chive blossoms. And I have borage in my garden. And also the flowers, you know, people always think that the flowers from basil should be tossed away. They're delicious.
They are
very
great.
Strong. And same thing with thyme flowers.
They're
fantastic.
So pretty if you leave them on your plate in a raw presentation. They're
right,
really
right.
nice.
Right,
hey,
The one thing I want to just warn people, we're talking about flowering basil and things like that. There are some people out there who will say that your herbs, if you let them flower, it'll diminish the flavor of the leaves of the flower. But for me, the flowers are so tasty that I just as soon let it happen.
I mean, are you going to go out and cut off every little flower in your
exactly.
garden?
Exactly.
No, no. I mean, I have so much of it, I never can use it all up either. Oregano blossoms are really delicious, too.
You know what I want to talk to you about? We have to take a short break. We'll come right back. And I want to talk to you about, you mentioned that you have borage in your garden.
Yes.
And something that you can find around here very often and right now is lovage and borage.
Yes, yes.
Which you don't see very often. We're going to leave that what we call a cliffhanger. We'll come back after the commercial. And Patricia's going to tell us how to use lovage and borage. Central Jersey, 1450. It's 1144.
Let me talk to you about lighting, and specifically about how you can enhance the appeal of any space. Lighting is a powerful, emotional, and aesthetic force. It's one of the most important elements of design. More than anything else, it sets the mood and tone for an entire experience. A room pops or it doesn't based on lighting. Lights on 9 is a top-notch commercial and retail lighting supplier. Lights on 9 supplied all the lights for our award-winning Catherine Lombardi restaurant, inside and out, dining room and kitchen. Lights on 9 has everything from tasteful and stylish chandeliers to table and floor lamps to outdoor lighting for illuminating a building or walkway or a sign. At Lights on 9, the service is exemplary, expert, and knowledgeable. They ship anywhere in the continental United States for free. Their retail store is in the Galleria Shopping Center on Route 9 in Manalapan. They're open 7 days a week. Call them at 732-308-9166. That's 732-308-9166. Or visit them at lightson9.com. That's lightson9.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. And we're speaking with Patricia Wells about her book, Vegetable Harvest, Vegetables at the Center of the Plate. Before the break, Patricia, we were talking about two things that you can actually get around here. I was in the farmer's market last Wednesday, and this farmer had this beautiful bunches of lovage. And I went and I said, they were like $2 a bunch. And I said, how much? She said, oh my God, I can't give them away. Nobody knows what to do with it. We made a lovage risotto that we put under a piece of halibut.
And, that sounds delicious.
Yeah, it was great.
Well, we have it growing in a garden here. It's called perpetual celery. Mm-hmm. And it grows year round. And it's strong, and I used to just kind of, you know, I haven't experimented enough with it, and I just put it in my, you know, stocks and so on. But in my cooking classes, I send two people out every day to just make any kind of salad they want from the garden. They can do whatever they want. And one day someone chose to make a complete salad of that, you know, doing a chiffonade. And I kind of went, oh, this is going to be horrible. And it was delicious.
A lovage salad, huh?
Very strong, but it was really great. And borage is really great. I love the beautiful blue flowers. I'm not a person who likes to look at a lot of flowers in my food and my salads, but... Mm-hmm. I think borage is exceptional because it's so pretty.
I think that a lot of people in this country, at least, they like to garnish things with pretty flowers and things like that. I don't love that unless the flowers are adding a flavor component.
Right. And I also, I mean, people will put things on the plate that aren't really edible, you know.
Yeah, I hate that.
But nasturtiums are pretty, too.
Yeah, and they're peppery. They're kind of okay.
Yeah, they have a good flavor.
I think they're better garnish for a punch, though, than if they float on top of a punch. It's kind of nice.
I like to have like a nice green salad with just a few, you know.
Yeah, a couple maybe. I don't know.
Yeah,
but
a little color.
But the nice you can get chive blossoms around here now, and the chive blossoms are very strong. And if they look like a dandelion, but if you bunch them up and if you crumble them up so like little individual blossoms garnish a salad, that's kind of nice.
Gives you yeah. Hey, no, that's a great idea. I love your risotto idea. I'll try that. Can I copy that? From you?
Yes, ma'am.
Well, email me. Let me know how it works out.
I guess We should put the risotto, the lovage risotto recipe up too.
Next to your recipe.
Oh, good.
That'll be like a cooperative thing. It'll be cool.
Right.
Greatest
great.
Hits. All right, let's talk about your book for a moment. One of the things that I think is really wonderful about your book, and I have never seen in a book on vegetables before, because it's a difficult topic. Vegetables are very tricky, more tricky than protein, to pair with wine. You have wine suggestions with all of your vegetable presentations. Kudos to you. How'd you pick them?
Thank you. Well, from around here, from my cellar. But I think it's interesting. You know, Jan Cees Robinson, the wine writer, she wrote a couple years ago that as currently we're becoming more and more white wine cuisine cooks. And I realize that myself. Sometimes people say, gee, you serve an awful lot of white wines. Well, you know, my food tends to kind of go better with white wines. You know, mm-hmm. there's so many great whites, like a Sancerre goes, you know, this any Sauvignon Blanc goes so well with lots of, you know, spring vegetables, and the flavors are just, I don't know, just wonderful.
You know, we're seeing a lot, though, in the, I'll say, the wine cognoscenti, a lot of very people who are really into wine, a lot of people started with white, Chardonnay, things like that, and then moved to red, Cabernet, things like that, then went to Pinot Noir and things like that. And now a lot of those same people are coming back to whites, to aromatic whites, because of how well they go with foods like this.
That's right. That's right. You know, because they have that kind of sometimes a little flinty flavor that you get in vegetables or the herbal flavors.
But I also think that, you know, it's fraught with hand grenades, and, you know, it's a bit of a minefield, I think, because usually when we do wine dinners at the restaurant a lot, where we'll have a producer come in and we'll have, you know, six or seven of their wines with four or five courses of dinner, and we always we conceptualize it and we come up with the menu, and we usually Mark and I have had the wines and we'll taste the food, but that day we always do a dry run in the afternoon, and we'll occasionally say, oh my God, we thought that was going to work and it doesn't work. And invariably when it doesn't work, why it doesn't work is because of onions or a flower or broccoli or cauliflower. It's
right.
Always
artichokes,
a vegetable that
yeah.
throws
no,
it off.
No, I agree. Cauliflower and broccoli, those are kind of difficult to work out.
Is there, see, I have this sort of rite of spring. And there's a woman named Laurence Fowler who owns the domain Weinbach.
Hold on a second, Francis. Where are you going with this?
No.
Oh, okay.
It's also a family show. There's a Rite of Spring. There's a woman named Laurence Fowler who is a winemaker at the domain Weinbach in the Alsace. And she was in the restaurant one day. And she, it was just the springtime. And she said, you know, it's spring. You should have Muscat from the Alsace with the first asparagus of the season. And I happened to have the first asparagus of the season. So we popped a bottle of her Muscat. And I thought, wow, that's just one of those amazing combinations that I'll always remember. And every time the first asparagus pops its head up, I go and grab some Muscat. Are there perfect matches like that for you out of all the matches in your book that you say, oh, whenever I have this, I need to have
God.
That
one? I can't say that I have just one.
Mm-hmm.
Although, no, I can't say because so many of the wines we have here aren't necessarily ones that you're going to find real easily.
Well, that's okay because they can find them at our restaurant and they can come.
Yeah, we feature millions of wines that you can't find very easily.
Now, you're in Provence. That's sort of the home of rosé in France. Like, is rosé wine big for you with your cuisine?
Absolutely. In the summer, not in the winter. But we have a Tavel from Domaine de la Mont Doré, which is our favorite. This is the marriage that is perfect, is our super pea stew, our vegetable soup, summer vegetable soup. If you don't have it with a Tavel rosé, then you might as well just not have it. You know,
just break the plate.
Red. No, it's true. And some of that, you know, so much of the pleasure of food is flavor memory.
Uh-huh.
You know, remember the time we had this and this together.
Mm-hmm.
But it's one of our huge, huge traditions to have those two together.
Well, I have a bunch of those traditions myself, and I think that you know, you talk about flavor memory. I think the important thing about, you know, your book and your view on food is that, you know, food and wine is a place where we come together, and it marks a specific time and a place, and I like marking the change of seasons with that. And cooking with vegetables like this, you really do...
You're forced to mark the change of
seasons.
And
it's not even just the change of season. You mark the progress of summer as strawberries come in and strawberries go out and cherries come in and cherries go out.
That's right.
Blueberries come in.
That's right. I know. It's like we have several cherry trees, and I mean, you know, even when... It's still the season, and we have no more cherries on the tree. I can't force myself to buy the cherries. It's like, wow, I don't ever buy cherries. And last Saturday, I was in the market, and this man said, "My wife just picked these cherries this morning. Taste them, and they were as good as any that I get right from my tree." And so I bought some. And
well, we're going to have to leave it in a moment, but Patricia, do you have any parting words for home cooks who I know are going to run out and buy your book in droves on our website, restaurantguysradio.com?
Well, just take it to your farmer's market and, you know, look at what's there and think, when you think your menus, think three vegetables first. How's that?
I love that idea. And
nice.
I'll tell you what, take the book to the market with you because, you know, we talk about market-driven restaurants and you can be market-driven at home. And what that is rather than look at the book and then go shopping for the ingredients for a dish you want to buy, take the book to the market.
Look
and
for some cool ingredients and see how you can
and
integrate
And then go
them.
Look at the book and see what you can cook. You'll cook yourself a great dinner, I promise. Patricia Wells, it's been a pleasure to have you on our show.
Thanks, Patricia.
You. It was fantastic talking with both of you.
We'll be back just in a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey 1450. It's 11:55. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants. You know, we had Patricia Wells on the show. She is one of the top experts on French cuisine, top American experts on French cuisine, and her book, Vegetable Harvest, is great. I didn't realize, because I've been away on vacation, I'm catching up on old New York Times. She's been scheduled to come on the show for a while. But she was on the front page of the food section of the New York Times.
Yeah, it was a big article that Mark Bittman did on June 6th.
And it shows her in a Parisian farmer's market. And I remember when I went to Europe as a young man, there were farmer's markets. And that's how people got their food. And I thought, oh, how quaint. Well, what do I do every Wednesday?
Oh, how quaint. And now we changed the way we act wherever we go.
And the farmer's markets are here now that we can do this. But I remember when we started in this business. Look, we're Jersey guys and we're fairly food-centric. So we would always be thrilled when the first Jersey tomatoes came up. And we would always be thrilled when we got the first local corn.
Mm-hmm.
But we weren't as in tune. I never thought, I don't know, it's just where we've evolved along with, I think, a lot of people in the country and a lot of the best chefs in America. It's kind of like we've grown up. The French have always been this way. The Italians have always been this way.
You know, I sat down and I had a meeting with a local farmer just yesterday. And
I sat
down and I was talking to him. And one of the things he said to me was, yeah, you know, we need to catch up with what's going on in the world today. We need to catch up. We need to change the way we farm. Some of the things that we farmed for, Well, the large ag business, and this is a guy who owns, you know, about 20 acres locally. He said, you know, the large ag business, we farm a lot of hay. I can't compete in the hay business anymore.
Right.
You know, there aren't very many horses in New Jersey anymore.
Right.
So there's not a lot of market for my product. I've got to change the way I farm and the way I market. And so he's looking to go out into these new areas, into directly to restaurants and to farmers markets. And that's making things more available to us.
By the way, and also the reason, not to pat you on the back, because I hate to give you credit for anything, but the reason Mark was meeting with him was to see how we can play a role in that. We have a number of farmers that we work with, and we talk with them. Now, this is obviously what you do in a restaurant, not as a consumer. We talk with them at the beginning of the year about what they're going to plant and when it should come in. And so... Well, I guess that comes back to my earlier point. It's not just tomatoes and corn. We're waiting for the cherries to come in. Then we're waiting for the strawberries to come in. I had five guys working all night pitting cherries.
Very funny.
To serve some on our menu currently.
A lot of red in that kitchen, by the way.
We're putting them up. We're putting up bushels of cherries.
But I don't know if those stains are ever coming out.
Hope you've enjoyed the hour listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are The Restaurant Guys. Go and eat some vegetables. Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12 noon.